The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 580 WCHS, its employees, or WVRC Media.
Put the power of Peyton on your side. We have the courtroom experience that you need. We never give up. We're prepared to fight for your rights. When you need action, count on us.
It's 8:21, and this is 580 WCHS, the voice of Charleston. Good Thursday morning to you. Jeff Jenkins with Harvey Peyton of the Peyton Law Firm in Nitro. Give us a call, 304-345-5858, 304-345-5858. Lines are open. Harvey, good morning to you.
Well, good morning, Jeff. It's a great day, beautiful day. You know, it's one of those mornings. There was no traffic on I-64, and so I was able to traverse the way from Putnam County to here in like 30 minutes from Taze Valley. And I got here early, and I can tell you I've said this before, there's no better place if you want to sit down and gather your thoughts in a peaceful, reflective setting. Across the street from this station, at the corner of Leon Sullivan Way and Virginia Street, right across the street from Sacred Heart Cathedral, is the most beautiful, peaceful, restful, sort of spiritual park. Well, it's not a park. It's a, I don't know what they call it. It was built by...
More like a garden?
It's a garden. It's a sculpture garden, and it's the Stations of the Cross, and I would just commend it to anybody. So I went over there and sat, and you don't need to worry about being late if I need to come over here at 8 o'clock, because at 8 o'clock, the cathedral sounds the time on its beautiful bells, and we came across the street. So it started off as a good day. I hope it stays good throughout the day. I wanted to... If you don't mind, I'd like to open up a little bit this morning. We talked about the Peyton Law Firm in the intro, but and, you know, we have a website, PeytonLawFirm.com. We've had it for several years. It is a very good way for folks to go online to see what we look like and to read about the type of work that we do and how long we've been there. You can see about our art collection and our civic activities and the number of appellate cases that we have had decided and published by appellate courts, both state and federal. This gives you a flavor on who we are, but personally who we are. First is me, Harvey Peyton. It was 48 years ago this month that I was licensed to practice law, admitted to the bar in West Virginia, May of 1974. And it doesn't seem like such a long time until you think about it, you know. Richard Nixon was president. That's been a long time ago. And the other lawyer, there are only two of us. There are only two of us in the office. That's me and my oldest son, Tom Peyton. And Tom, he was admitted. Now, he was a late bloomer because he had to take the bar exam, which I didn't. I passed, graduated WVU with fairly high honors in our class. And at that time, we had a diploma privilege. If you graduated from law school with a sufficient grade point average, you were admitted to the bar shortly thereafter. So we left Morgantown first week in May, and the third week in May, we're down here in the Supreme Court being sworn in as real lawyers. One of the benefits of that was the faculty really cranked down on the students. They assumed it was their responsibility to serve the function of a bar examining committee. And yeah, the attrition rate was pretty well over 30%. Now, the classes stayed full because the attrits would come back in. But Tom graduated in 2001. He took the bar exam, passed, of course, the first time, and was admitted in October. So he's been practicing law 21 years. And then the following summer, he went over to Columbus and took the Ohio bar exam and was admitted on his first try. So he's been admitted to practice in Ohio for 20 years. So we've been around a while. That's, what, 69 years, almost 70 years of combined legal experience doing litigation, helping people with injuries, and a lot of everyday problems. We have my wife Jennifer works with us. She's been with us 37 years. Tom's wife, Mary Ann, works with us. So that's another 21 years. Our longest non-familial employee is Melody Whittington Matthews, who's, 28 years. She started in October 94. Then we have Sarah Thaxton. Sarah's been there about 10 years off and on. Her mother worked for us. That's how Sarah started working. Then her mother retired. And then Amber Gonneau, Amber Wentz Gonneau, a good Nitronian who now lives in St. Albans. Amber's been there 3 years, but it looks like she's got a long future. So you get to see, you don't see a different face every day, and you don't see a non-personal handling of your case. You have a contact person, and then you have a lawyer to deal with. The contact person for me is Jennifer. The contact person for Tom is usually Amber or Mary Ann. So there's somebody that you can ask questions about your case. And the problem is we've been successful, and right now we actually have to turn down a lot of work and have been doing that for the last several months. And you know, I hate to offend anyone, but or you can say, look, I can do this, but it's going to be 3 weeks or 6 weeks before I can see in my schedule. And some people say, well, fine, I'll wait for you. But it's different. If you've got something that is time sensitive, if someone calls and they've been in an auto accident, a trucking accident, a fall, I mean, it's something you need to immediately address because you've got to get the facts cemented. You've got to start an immediate investigation. Those take precedence. If it's a criminal case that someone calls in and there's been a serious allegation that you need to immediately, but you know, the thing for things like real estate transfers or some estate planning or document review, which we do, about 30% of what we do is that sort of work. Right now, it's going to be a while out in the future. Call and we'll see what we'll get to everybody as soon as we can, but you know, there are limitations to what human beings can do. I did see with interest in the paper this morning where there was a nice, well, depending on which side of the suit you're on, there was a sizable civil verdict returned in Kanawha County. I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before. It was a suit against Ford Motor Company and others. To set the scene, an accident occurred out on Route 33 in Jackson County between Ripley and Spencer, where a young lady lost control of her vehicle. When she reentered the highway, she crossed the center line and impacted what you would call the the A-pillar, which would be the front door column on the driver's side of a Ford Mustang. At a pretty good rate of speed, about 59 miles an hour, which you can determine with almost absolute certainty because these vehicles all have event data recorders that pick up. Well, then a terrible thing happened. The brake fluid reservoir, that stuff's highly flammable, was situated in such a way in the Mustang that the side impact caused it to rupture and a fire started. And at the same time, the impact with the left door column, which is the hinge column, the driver was able to get out and, according to the account in the paper, died of burns, probably died of smoke inhalation or some other, but was burned while she was alive. You couldn't think of much worse way to go. So that case proceeded both on liability against the young lady who lost control and hit the car, and against Ford Motor Company. And that the theory in that case was crashworthiness. That's one of the sort of occult causes of action in West Virginia. Really, it was pretty clear that the other driver was at fault in this accident, but it really would not have made any difference whose fault the accident was, the initial collision, because vehicles are supposed to be built to be reasonably safe regardless of who's at fault. It's like a seatbelt failure or an airbag fails to deploy. Well, yeah, but you lost control and hit a tree. Well, they're safety devices. They're supposed to work regardless of how the risk is presented. And the law in West Virginia is favorable to plaintiffs or injured parties in crashworthiness. About almost 30 years ago, we had a case in our Supreme Court where General Motors wanted our Supreme Court to adopt the most stringent restrictive products liability rule as related to crashworthiness. And in one of the best opinions he ever wrote, the recently departed Justice Neely said, wait a minute, West Virginia accounts for less than 1% of the total number of sales of automobiles in the United States. Every other state, almost every other state except two, have a standard more liberal than that proposed to us by General Motors. So why is it fair for West Virginians who are injured by defective vehicles to seek recovery at a higher standard, thereby subsidizing more prosperous states who have a huge share of the market? And so the rule now, therefore, is and has been since, in any case where there's a conflict of laws regarding crash-worthiness, whatever the most liberal rule applies in any court in the United States will be the rule in West Virginia until Congress makes some motion to nationalize standards for automobile safety. Well, that has never happened. And crash-worthiness implies that if the vehicle is not reasonably safe, there is a defect, either in design or use, and because of that defect, the injury that a person suffers is either caused or enhanced by the defect in the vehicle, then you can recover for the enhanced injury. Now, in this case, in Kanawha County, the jury found that 99% of the fault in this young woman's death was the fault of the defect in the vehicle. And 1% was the fault of the driver, mm-hmm. which is an important finding because now that we have pure contribution, that means 99% of that $7 million will be forged. I noticed there was a statement from their spokesman. They'll pay it. That's not the kind of verdict that a company like Ford Motor Company wants to, I think, attempt to make some law with. In the scheme of things, it's a big verdict in West Virginia. In the scheme of things, it is not a big verdict, right? I mean, there are automotive verdicts in Texas, Alabama, and other places, South Carolina, Florida, hundreds of millions of dollars for similar losses.
So the finding basically was that Ford should have known that.
Well, there was a crash test. I mean, our office settled or resolved a crash-worthiness case about 3 weeks ago. Now, as with all those cases that you resolve short of a trial, there's really strict confidentiality about the outcome. Suffice to say, all you can say is the matter's resolved. With all these cases, when you engage in some discovery, what you want is any of the crash testing. These companies do crash testing all the time. When what happens, they'll be testing for one particular thing. For instance, the case that we were involved in, there was a test for gas tank integrity and rear-end collisions. Well, while they're running these tests, it shows significant issues of front seat collapse. I mean, the seats are collapsing and rotating rearward in a rear-end collision. So, well, they said, well, that's not a test for seat rigidity. Well, no, but it's certainly notice. You can look at the dummy in that seat and see it rotate backwards, and its head strikes the rear seat. So in this case, they had done an offset barrier test. They drove the Mustang at a certain speed or propelled it on a sled into a rigid barrier. I'm sure to test the crush resistance. I mean, there's a crushability of the front and back of these cars to absorb force. And during that test, which was done in 2011, there may have been more than one series of those, there was an evident issue with the brake fluid reservoir rupturing. Well, Ford's position was, well, that wasn't a test for this type of accident. That didn't put us on notice. That didn't impose any burden on us to redesign the location of the brake fluid reservoir, and therefore our product was reasonably safe. The jury didn't agree with that. And I don't know who. I know the law firm involved, Farmer-Klein and Campbell, had the plaintiffs from here, Beasley Allen from Atlanta, which I think is my old friend Cale Conley. He and I had a Ford vehicle fire case several years ago. And they know what they're doing. I'm sure they had experts who said otherwise, and the jury listened to the testimony. And, you never know what the discussions were about settling a case like that. You'll never find out. I mean, Ford may have offered more to settle the case than the verdict that was returned. That does happen. I find that difficult to believe. I suspect they offered some significant amount of money, but less. But you have to look at the facts of every case. And when you're looking at a relatively young woman trapped in a vehicle with a crushed door and the vehicle's on fire, I mean, what could be a worse nightmare, right? Maybe drowning in a vehicle that you couldn't get.
So they found like $5 million. It was broken up $2 million to $5
million. Yeah, $2 million was to the estate of the young woman, because in West Virginia, our wrongful death statute allows the estate to recover for lifetime pain and suffering. I mean, if a person is injured in an accident but is subjected to mental anguish, pain, and suffering between the time of impact and death, that person themselves is entitled to recover. In the case that Tom had in Morgantown for the young lady from Charleston, she lived and fought for her life for hours, and the jury made a significant award for her lifetime pain and suffering. So that's one element of damages. It's distributed through that young lady's estate to her heirs. And then there's the wrongful death element for just what's called solatium. The loss of a person's ability to work and earn money, the loss of the care, comfort, and companionship of that person. The jury accorded $5 million to that element of damages, which is a lot of money, but that's, again, I would say by our standards. It was tried in front of Joanne Tabbitt, who's clearly well qualified to try a complex case. She worked for years in the defense insurance bar side of the equation, so I can tell you from personal experience, Joanne Tabbitt knows what she's doing. Somehow, she's not been able, the voters don't seem to be motivated to put her on the Supreme Court. They should have, but we'll see what the future holds. It's an interesting case.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't think that there'd be an appeal. They'll either settle it for some discounted amount or just pay the thing, get rid of it.
It's 8:38. That's Harvey Payton of the Payton Law Firm in Nitro on every Thursday morning. And the number to call, 304-345-5858, 304-345-5858. Lines are open with Harvey back in a moment on 580 WCHS.
I never thought it would happen to me.
I never thought this could happen to me.
And then?
It did.
It did.
It did. It did.
We need a response unit to Shepherd.
We live life as though these types of life-altering incidents will never happen to us. Until they do.
Payton Law Firm, handling injury and wrongful death claims arising from any type of accident. Fighting for your life, your compensation, and ultimately, your peace of mind. PaytonLawFirm.com.
Let's kickstart summer together at Lowe's this Memorial Day. Keep your home nice and cool with our exclusive Harbor Breeze Hathaway 52-inch ceiling fan special value. Was $134.98, now $99.98. And get our Pit Boss Pro Series 850 Pellet Grill special value. Was $549, now $499. Take advantage of our summer savings this Memorial Day exclusively at Lowe's. Home to any budget, home to any possibility. Selection varies by location while supplies last, valid 519 through 525.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance and more, and Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
Put the power of Peyton on your side. Have the courtroom experience that you need. We never give up. We're prepared to fight for your rights. When you need action, count on us. Put the power of Peyton on your side. The power of Peyton.
It's 8:41 and this is 580 WCHS, the voice of Charleston. 19 minutes until the top of the hour, and Harvey Payton is with us, Payton Law Firm in Nitro. and give us a call, 304-345-5858, 304-345-5858. I wanted to ask Harvey because, I mean, this is impacts so many people that listen to our station and in this area. I-64 DOH received bids this week, so it's going to be built
right
for like a $32, $34 million new interchange.
Interchange at Culloden, which is really, you know, of the 48 years I've been practicing law, 45 of them have been with an emphasis in Putnam County. I mean, I opened an office in Nitro in 1977. We built our new building in 94. It's in Putnam County. We had an office down in the valley for a while, but you compete against yourself. And it, you know, originally, you know, when I got there, Putnam County had a population of maybe 25,000 people. Now it's pushing 60. And if you included the area, which is still a sort of a part of Taze Valley, that is the Culloden to Milton area in Cabell County, there are certain little pockets of arrested development. Culloden is one of them. If you drive down the Valley Road between the Crooked Creek Interchange, which is a new one, and the Hurricane Interchange, you're in a different world of development and fast pace and economic, some degree of prosperity and schools. Well, then you've got a little gap because the next exit on I-64 is Milton. It sort of circles up to the northeast of the actual town of Hurricane, but if you drive down Route 60, you hit a little stagnation. And so all the traffic is concentrated on the Taze Valley Interchange, exit 39, or Hurricane, and see, traffic is a problem. Well, to alleviate that, the Department of Highways is going to go west of Hurricane, probably a couple of miles, and put in an interchange. I think a simple interchange, not any cloverleaf, one of the off-on ramps on either side, which will be a huge help to that area. It'll help the prosperity. You know, you can't convince the Kanawha County Commission of this, but we know it well in Putnam County that a good job in Milton can help the economy of Putnam County, right? Just like a good airport could help the economy everywhere. But, you know, it's a critical need. And there's also a critical need, and I think it's coming. There is a there's a real need, I think, for an interchange, just a simple off-on interchange, in the between the Winfield exit, the old exit 39, and Hurricane, somewhere just east of the rest area. Probably, and I would think, at the Cow Creek. You know, there's a road called Cow Creek, which is one of the things that the Kanawha County Commission used in the 60s to mock the idea of a truly modern, updated 7,800-foot runway in Putnam County. Was they sent Kent McLaughlin down, and they made fun of it in the Gazette as the Cow Creek interchange. Well, we're going out on Cow Creek. Well, right now, there's more development around the Cow Creek, Taze Valley Road interchange, new development, than anywhere here, I'll say that. And so there's the highways just this side of the high school. On Taze Valley Road, there's a stop sign. Cow Creek Road goes out that way to several high-end subdivisions and businesses. So the thought would be, I was talking to Don Hayes, who's with Randolph Engineering, and he's another one of the people who's made Putnam County a really good place to live. Don's been an engineer with Randolph for 44 years. And he says, well, that's what the county leaders are pushing highways to think about, a similar interchange at Cow Creek, which would be, just, you top the hill, if you're westbound past the Truckway Station, you go past where Sleepy Hollow Golf Club is and Charlie Wine's old farm, and then there's Cow Creek Road. You can actually turn right at the Cow Creek light on Taze Valley Road, go down under the interstate. There's already a flyover there. And continue on that road through an area called Sugar Camp and come out on Hurricane Creek Road, just near the new interchange.
Right.
It's not really a very good road right now to go that way. I suspect it'll be improved in the future. It's also the scene of where Deputy Janey was killed. It was about 2 miles out that road at the Raymond Huck residence. So that's 30 years ago. But that would be a great thing because that would help alleviate. I mean, if you're going to go to the middle of the valley around the hospital and where the medical community is, and West Hayes Elementary, and apartment complexes, and Winfield High School or Hurricane High School, you'd have to get off at Hurricane or at Winfield and travel up the Valley Road, and it's really, really congested. So I'm hoping that with this $32 million project in place, next thing we'll hear from Highways is we're going to get out here and do some surveying and talk about land acquisition. They, you know, when I-64 was built, they've got a lot of right-of-way. As you can see down here on the bridge project, when they're westbound of that bridge, they've got enough right-of-way already acquired inside the fences to put in easily another lane of traffic and a berm. And looking at the satellite photo, there's that much available at Cow Creek. And on the northeast side of the interstate, there really isn't much development. They'd have to take some houses, a few, on the other side. I just hope that's in the coming. Good roads mean prosperity. And while I wish the money was being spent here, I see where the governor was down in Welch last week talking about the Coalfields Expressway. Well, more power to him, you know. There's kind of a bad rap on where you're wasting money, wasting lather, shaving a donkey to spend money. And well, that's what they said about Flatwoods, right? And a road from here to Williamson, to Kentucky. Well, you wouldn't have Quarter G if you didn't have that road. You wouldn't have the Southridge, right?
Right.
If that road, Quarter G, had gone where Ken Heckler wanted it to go before he lost his juice, which was the old Route 10 route into Huntington, Huntington wouldn't be in the economic state that it's in, and Charleston would be a heck of a lot worse off than it is now.
So the new exit that they took bids on this week, and from, you know, Chris Lawrence is from that area, I mean, that's where he lives,
yeah.
And he said, and you would know this, that 60, I mean, is really close to the interstate in that area. You know, as you go over there, it's not very far, so that's not going to be. It's pretty flat, right? So
it's
not going to be that much.
There's a little issue on the northeast side of the interstate because it's mountainous, hilly, but there's a road that goes right under the interstate, right where they're going to put this interchange. So you're going to be connecting with a little feeder road. They have to upgrade it, maybe the three lanes from a two-lane secondary road. $32 million is not a lot of money to build an interchange. And the thing is, you can build that interchange. They're not going to have to change any bridges because the bridge that's there now is already adequate for the interstate traffic. It's just a matter of upgrading the road under the interstate out to Route 60 and putting in an on and off ramp on either side. I mean, that's the kind of work that might be maybe a 2-year project, and bang, it'll be done. It's
that would help. I think that helped Milton too.
Oh my goodness, yes. And then you got, you know, if there's ever going to be anything at the Phoenician, you know where the Phoenician is, the proposed resort,
right?
We go there on our way to Kim's Greenhouse out in Lincoln County on Mud River Road, and it's slowly, slowly creeping along. You know, it was the old Morris Memorial home, and now there was a period of time there didn't seem to be much work. Well, last week there was some work in progress. And there's something, they've got some golf greens out there. It looks like they're working on a par-3 golf course. I mean, more power to the guy. It's Hoops, right, to get the coal guy. I think that's who's
building it. Yeah.
And, you know, like their coal company's been in and out of bankruptcy, but I assume the man's got the resources to do what he says he's going to do. And it's like every project, there are naysayers. You know, West Virginia is the first answer to everything. Here's no. If you ask somebody who comes from out of this area about their dealings with local politicians, community leaders, bankers, it's like, well, no. Well, then you work for about a year, and then you get to, well, maybe. And then if you can get some vig behind you, you get to a yes. It's like the guy I heard speak that was head of the Chemical Institute. When he left here, he said, West Virginia is like, ready, aim, aim, aim. And if you can wait out the aims, maybe 5 or 6 of them, you'll get to fire, and then the project goes and it's successful.
And, you know, in another place where they're going to put an exit, they're pushing. It looks like it's got from the congressional delegation to push. There's another one in Morgantown.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know,
the place is
growing.
If you've got that kind of traffic, you've got to have highway access. You know, I think one of the, you know, they finally finished the project at Beckley on I-64/77. Well, there should be an interchange below there to service the Glade Springs Daniels area. Now, that was QT'd again by the interference of the Kanawha County Commission, who complained about the tolls, were going to give a break to a development that at that time was owned by Bill Bright. Well, who cares, right? It's the benefit to the people who use the highways. That there's terrible traffic down there. It impedes Shady Springs. You can't get to. Right? Try to go to a game at Shady Spring.
And that's where all people are moving that way,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they're moving there because there's available land. It's a little more level. You're closer to that split between Bluefield and Beckley. People like living there.
That's a pretty area. That 19, you go over there all the way down.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it is.
It would help Hinton, right? It would make it easier to get to Hinton. It would make it easier to get to Pipestem State Park or Twin Falls. Maybe in the future with less provincial regionalism and more common good, we'll get some of these things.
It's 8:52. Harvey Payton's with us, Payton Law Firm in Nitro, 304-345-5858, 304-345-5850. I wanted to ask you, because you were in Morgantown around the same time as the co-ed murders.
And oh, I was there.
Yeah,
I
guess, there.
Yes, buddy, they were kidnapped right across the street from a place that I used to frequent some. It was called the Acropolis Grill. Affectionately known as Nick's. It was a little restaurant and beer place right across from the MI, the Mineral Industries building.
Right. I know where it is.
So they live
North High.
It's on Willie Street.
On Willie Street.
That's
right. Willie.
So if you go northbound on Willie, there's a curve there right by the MI building.
Right.
Turns back, joins University Avenue.
Right.
And they were living in the apartments out at where you go up the top of the hill there on University on the left. Wasn't far. I think they could have walked. They certainly could have walked. I think that was their intention, but it was the wintertime, and it was a Sunday evening. And I remember it like it was yesterday. Karen Farrell and Mary Mallory. Karen Farrell was from Greenbrier County, I think Quinwood, and Mary Mallory was from Jersey. They were roommates, or at least friends in the dormitory, hitchhiking. And somehow there was word that it was right there at that curve in Willie Street where the girls were hitchhiking and got a ride. They were seen. They were gone. Boom. And, you know, it was just, that was in the spring of 70, the winter of 70. Well, it was just terrifying for women on campus. You know, hitchhiking used to be nothing. To get from Evansdale to downtown, men, women, whoever, you just stick out your, I hitchhike home all the time from Morgantown, just go north of town on Route 7, hitchhike to 100 and out to New Martinsville, and it just wasn't a big deal. It stopped overnight, bang. And obviously women were terrified. Here are two young co-eds just disappeared. Well, I remember they called out the National Guard. And John Beto was a guy who was a friend of mine. He was in the Guard. And somehow, and there's a lot of, you were up there. I mean, you're the news director. There's a lot of weird circumstances surrounding this case.
Right.
You know, a pocketbook or some personal effects were found out on the Grafton Road, and I think Goddard was the state trooper's name who sort of led the investigation. They got some sort of a tip or information to look in that area, but nobody really knows where that info came from. And then the next thing you know, the state police are out on what's called Goshen Road.
Goshen
now, at
Road.
The time, it's called the Weirton Mine Road, because out there where the girls were found was a Weirton Steel had a coal mine.
Mm-hmm.
And, then all of a sudden the news breaks, bang. They found the bodies. I've never been really clear why they were searching in that area, because there was no suspect in custody at the time. None. And when the bodies were found, they had been abused and decapitated. Whether that was pre- or post-mortem, probably post-mortem, one would hope. And never found. And then again, they remember, about 5 years later, they got a kid from a weirdo from Point Marion, and he confessed. Eugene Paul Clausen. He's tried twice, convicted twice.
He said he made it up and then recanted, said he made it up because he saw the story in a crime magazine.
Yeah. And there's still just uncertainty. Clyde C., you remember Clyde C. was in the legislature. Clyde represented a guy named, I think his name was Charlie Eagle, who was from Fairmont, who decapitated a man and dumped him over in the Smoke Hole Caverns area. And he just swore that that guy was, he'd been in the area, he'd been in Fairmont. Who knows? I mean, I've never been completely satisfied with the answers. I know Judy Green was a dear friend of mine. She's deceased now. She was Hobby Spaulding's court reporter. But she started in Morgantown, from Kiger, where they tried Clawson. And she said it was the worst experience of her life. You know, they're reading that confession into the record. She has to sit there and take it down. It's just horrible. Page after page after page of just perversion and cruelty to these young women. We'll see what happens. You know, it's
so they got some information from somebody who was on that National Guard search, and they got some information. They think the heads or what's left might be in that same general area because they're out at the Goshen Road.
Clawson said he threw the heads. He kept them for a while, mutilated them, but there was some break in the mountain up near Point Mary. I think it was a mine crack in the mountain that he had disposed of the, and they searched and searched extensively, found absolutely nothing, not a thread of hair, not a tooth, nothing. So, you know, can a skull be there 50 years later? Well, sure it can, depending on where it is. You know, field mice love to chew on anything. Well, I look forward to seeing, if we got an answer. And that's one of the real traumatic events that I can remember from Morgantown. That I can remember the riot and all the tear gas and the doors broken at the administration building. And I can remember the day Martin Luther King was shot. That was terrible on campus. And the day we lost to Pitt 36-35 halftime. I hate to lump those together in range of severity, but 36-35 was a traumatic experience.
Yeah, Bobby Bowden learned that day, never quit running it up.
That's right. Just keep piling it on. So it's not my job to keep the score down. It's their job to keep the score down.
That's right. Harvey, Peyton Law Firm in Nitro.
Well, the Peyton Law Firm in Nitro, as I said before, we've got a combined 70 years of experience in helping everyday people solve extraordinary problems. And a problem is extraordinary if it's your problem. Right, we have a little banner back in our lunchroom that says no case is any bigger than the lawyer thinks it is, and it's the biggest case the client has. It is the biggest case that person has. So you have to sit and listen to that, and that's our principle. Our principle also is to communicate with our clients, return every call every day if we reasonably can, or as soon thereafter as possible, to try and respond to correspondence. The best thing to do if you would like to think about the Peyton Law Firm to handle your issues, whether it's a bodily injury, a financial loss, or just something that you want to talk about, is go to our website, PeytonLawFirm.com. There's a tab where you can send an email question and provide as much information as you feel comfortable with, because no one sees that except me or Tom. And there's a disclaimer on there that says all this information will be held strictly in confidence. Now, it doesn't create an attorney-client relationship, but it does guarantee confidence. Or come and see us, or call us at 304-755-5556. And again, Jeff, it's been a great pleasure to be here. Hoppy will be back next week.
He will be.
Good.
Okay.
Glad to be here. Give me something to read in the morning. Read that right-wing commentary.
All right, Harvey. Good seeing you.
Good seeing you.
All right. ABC News is next. Then Kerry Hudasek with local news. Then 580 Live. This is 580 WCHS.
580 WCHS AM, 96.5 FM Charleston, 104.5 Cross Lanes, a WVRC media station. We're proud to live here too.
From ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The markets open in half an hour and traders are bracing for what could be another shaky day following Wednesday's 1,000-point drop for the Dow. Big retailers like Target reporting dismal earnings due to inflation. And now some are worried about what the next several months will hold. ABC News Chief Business Correspondent Rebecca Jarvis with more from Wall Street.
Now there are many economists who are looking at this economy saying what lies ahead. Well, 133 economists surveyed by the Conference Board, of that group, 68% see a recession on the horizon.
The Labor Department reporting an uptick in people applying for unemployment benefits, 218,000 compared to just